Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is cellist Jeffrey Ziegler. For 8 years, he was the cellist in the internationally renowned Kronos Quartet, known for commissioning and performing new music. But about a year and a half ago, he left the group to embark on his own solo career, collaborating with a number of contemporary composers and musicians, ranging from Wilco's Glenn Kochke to jazz pianist Vijay Iyer. Over the years, Ziegler's recorded over a dozen recordings for Nonesuch Records, Deutsche Grammophon, and Smithsonian Folkways as a part of his work with Kronos, and prior to that, the Coriano Quartet. He's also appeared on Norah Jones' Not Too Late album for Blue Note. This past year, though, marked the premiere of his first solo album, Something of Life. Here he is, playing a portion of Philip Glass's Orbit from the new recording. Music of Philip Glass, played by cellist Jeffrey Ziegler, who will be appearing tonight at 8 o'clock at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center and performing works from his new album, including that piece from Philip Glass's, which is on the new recording. He'll be joined by percussionist Ian Rosenbaum in the program presented by Corgus Productions. Jeffrey Ziegler is my guest today. Jeffrey Ziegler, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And the last time you were in Tulsa, it was when you were a member of Kronos Quartet. But since leaving, you've had this intense year and a half of collaborations where you're embarking on a solo career and collaborations with a number of composers. And I think that's why you decided to leave Kronos. And has it lived up to your expectations?
It's been quite an intense couple years now. I've had the pleasure of working with a number of different composers and collaborators, and I have to say that it's been extremely exciting, and I look forward to doing much more.
You know, for a cellist, a lot of times most cellists are playing composers that are long gone. Mm-hmm. You've specialized in playing for composers that are writing things, if not for you, written in your lifetime. What is that experience like when you're always premiering new music, or at least seeing music that's never been performed for the first time?
I love it. It's a little bit like that feeling that one has, let's say, when you wake up on Christmas morning or the day of your birthday, and you just don't know what it's going to be. And when a new piece comes in, it's an amazing gift. I'm very grateful for the experience, but I love learning something new. I love having the experience of working with the composer and uncovering the mysteries of the piece. And so you're correct. I've kind of dedicated my life to this process. And it's a process that began even when I was a student, like in high school. And slowly but surely, this world has just gotten larger and larger for me, and I just really love doing this.
Yeah, no, you have great teachers that taught you, Janos Starker, for mm-hmm. one, who's yeah. a wonderful, wonderful player. Was that not the route you wanted to go? Did you always think you wanted to do new music?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, especially when I was in college, the teachers that I had were amazing. I feel very lucky to have worked with Janos Starker. Paul Katz was my teacher, Stephen Doan. Each three of those musicians I really idolize, and I really love them as people, as musicians. And I feel like so much of who I am as an artist was informed by what they gave me. However, at the same time, just kind of being fair to everyone involved, contemporary music wasn't really their forte, and with each of them, they were always very accepting of my funny little quirk. But what they really taught me were the values of just really good musical values on the instrument,
tone,
sound, technique, the three Bs, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, I spent a great deal of study learning the standard literature. And I would hope that I apply some of those qualities to learning a new piece of music. I think that even though you may even be scratching all over the place for a certain pieces, the quality of the scratch and making sure that interpretively there's a certain integrity to your approach, it's very important to be very much in tune with that. So it makes me smile, actually, when I think about how each of my teachers kind of handled my tendency.
Well, you know, and to be fair to them, if you had been maybe a decade earlier, mm-hmm. they would have said, young man, that's a good way to starve. Because, well, you know, the new music movement, it was always underground, and you probably benefited from the fact that it really started. It's still not a great, it's the greatest living in the world. I mean, as far as you're not going to get rich doing it, but you're going to have a great, you know, there are performing opportunities. Whereas a generation earlier, there wasn't.
Right. I mean, I think that with these three, at least, I mean, their feet were very firmly planted in the traditional world.
Yeah.
But, you know, they also did play a great deal of new music themselves and premiered several pieces, had several pieces written for them. It just wasn't their main pursuit. I like to think that in a way the seed of this approach kind of began with me when I was in high school. My teacher, her name is Margaret Tate, and she's a cellist in the San Francisco Symphony. I grew up in the Bay Area. And she, although she played in the orchestra, on the side she had a string quartet called the Aurora String Quartet. And every concert that they gave, they did a series at the Old First Church in San Francisco. And on every program, they would always put on at least one piece, one contemporary work. And I don't mean like Shostakovich. I mean somebody who was living, maybe even living in the Bay Area, like really intense stuff.
On the edge stuff.
On the edge. Mm-hmm. And I actually saw Margaret last year because the San Francisco Symphony was on tour at Carnegie Hall. I live in New York now. And we were meeting, and I said, Margaret, you know, in a way, I think that the path that I took, it's all your fault. Because my life has been very much about playing new music and playing string quartets, playing chamber music.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, you said, you know, I might be scratching, but it has to come from this musical values that I learned from mm-hmm. playing Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. Mm-hmm. Give us a sense of what the difference is.
Well, you know, one great description of that I saw in the music of John Zorn, actually. Mm-hmm. There's this piece called Cat and Nine Tails, which I played many times with Kronos. And in the piece, there are notated, well, in its own way, scratches. Each scratch has a different type of scribble. And so you have to look at the scribble, and based on that scribble, that informs how you scratch. And often, there would be a like some kind of a description, and one, I think it said like Tyson knocks out Sphinx or something like that. and so that with that image, you just kind of go, and it has to be the right kind of scratch.
It's amazing. Those are the instructions. It's
yes.
sort of these sort of visual cues that you have to translate into aural music, you know.
Right. And in a sense, that's what notation is. I mean, when you're looking at the note, that's only part of the story.
Sure, yeah. No, it gives you a sense of the sound, but really what you do with that sound is everything else.
Exactly.
Now, are those scribbles on your traditional five-line music? Or?
You know, those scratches, no. But, you know, talking about like new pieces coming in and, you know, it being a new world, in a way, each composer has to find their notation to express whatever they are imagining. You know, I think of like George Crumb's music where the notation might go up and around and in a very circular motion. And somehow that's what George felt that he needed to do in order to express the feel of the music. And while as a performer you're looking at that like, I can't read this. In a way, the process of learning how to read the music also informs your interpretation for the work.
Now, how important is when you get a notation like, you know, Tyson knocks out Sphinx or something, you know, how important is it to have the composer there to get a sense of of what he wanted, or is that just a suggestion and he's whatever you decide Tyson knocks out Spinks is good?
Well, I think in the case of John is a very smart guy, and I think that he has a very clear idea of what that means. So it's certainly very helpful to have the composer there. I mean, I would love to be able to go up to Beethoven and ask him, hey, what did you mean by this passage? But unfortunately, we don't have that luxury. It's an imperfect system, notation. And so we do the best we can to respect what we feel are the wishes of the creator of the music. But also, it isn't a one-way street. Each piece has to be personal. My wife is a composer, and we talk about this a great deal, that, you know, I do believe that the job of the performer is not to recreate what the composer imagines. I think that's a part of it, but it has to be within the world of what I can create. I have a very important voice as well, and that's a part of the conversation. But then it's also not a two-way street, because someone has to listen to it. The audience has to respond. So I guess it's a three-way street. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, you have to connect to an audience. Otherwise, you're not communicating at all. You're just you're lecturing or yelling or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your wife, let's hear some music. Is this a piece you're going to play, a piece by Paolo that's on the new recording?
Yes, it's called Listen Quiet. And it's a piece for cello and, I would say, an army of percussion, played by one person, Ian Rosenbaum, terrific percussionist based in Brooklyn. And this piece is entitled Listen Quiet, and it is in two parts. The first part, Listen, has a very percussion-heavy part, and it's very dynamic. And the second part, entitled Quiet, is much more meditative.
Well, I think we're hearing this. What we're going to hear is a little section that's almost transitioned from the first section to the second section.
I see. I think. Oh, terrific.
So, and because it features you very prominently, but you also get the sense of rhythm that's a big part of it. Here's music by my guest today, Jeffrey Ziegler, from his most recent recording, Something of Life, the works of Paolo Prestini in this particular case, one of the works you'll hear in the concert at the Dungeness Theater. That's music by my guest today, cellist Jeffrey Ziegler, who will be performing tonight at 8 o'clock at the Dungeness Theater, the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, presented by Corgus Productions. And it will be featuring himself and the percussionist Ian Rosenbaum. And now a lot of your work has pre-recorded things. Will there be pre-recorded things as a part of the concert tonight?
Yes, there will be some pre-recorded sounds. Every cello sound you hear is me, I promise you. And a few effects and various ways that I'm changing the sound of the cello.
As I was mentioning, this has been a really interesting year and 2 years since you decided to leave Kronos. And that must have been a difficult decision for anybody who loves to play new music. I mean, you know, Kronos is kind of like the pinnacle. It's an ensemble that plays exclusively new music. Mm-hmm. Most of the music is written for the group. And, of course, for a lot of people, it would be a dream job. Why decide to step away after 8 years?
Well, it is a dream job. I have to say, I had it. No, I really loved the time that I was in the quartet. You know, I played with those guys for 8 years, and I'm very grateful to be able to work with them and to have all of the experience and adventures that we shared together. But it was very clear that it was time for me to move forward, move on, do more individual projects. And to be able to branch out into various ways. And since I've left the quartet, I've been very fortunate to be able to do many different things, collaborate with a lot of different artists, composers, and just mix it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's been fun.
Now, you also said in an interview when you first decided to leave, you said, I wanted to get back to teaching. I've always wanted to be a teacher.
It's true.
How important is teaching in your musical life?
It's very important. I teach at the Manus College right now, the New School for Music, and my students are terrific. I hope that while I'm here in Tulsa, they're practicing hard. But I had never imagined a life in music without teaching. It's a very important part of the dialogue that, it's similar to what we were discussing about the notation. I believe that all of us kind of exist on a continuum. And so much of who I am as a musician, I've learned from my teachers. And it's my, not only something that brings me some kind of joy or satisfaction, it's actually my duty to pass that on to the next generation. It's that kind of a tradition. It's an oral tradition. And I hope that I'm able to do that with my students at Manus. And so far, it's been going well.
I've heard from a lot of really good teachers, this is they learn as much teaching as they do from learning as a student. In many ways.
You do discover a great deal. You discover.
I mean, it's like the little, small, intricate things. When you have a student that's having trouble getting a particular passage right, and all of a sudden you figure out the workaround or the way to make it work.
This is true.
You learn things that you might not have known about your own playing that can help you.
Yeah, my students will agree with me when I often look at them and I think, you know what, actually I haven't tried this yet, but I think that you might need to try this out. You might need to fix it this way. And it's true, I learned a great deal of what I have been even doing incorrectly myself over the years. And it's a great workshop for everyone to be able to have that dialogue, to be able to experiment. And I've really been enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And it's also been interesting because so much of what I do at Manus has actually been stepping back into the world of standard literature. So I teach a great deal of Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms. And, it was interesting for me because I wasn't sure even myself how that would go. Would I feel that I was a fish out of water? Because I had basically taken like 10 years away from performing that kind of literature. And what I actually found is that in that 10 years, because of the experiences that I've had working with composers, touring all over the world, that I actually became a lot more opinionated about the music, a lot more opinionated. And it's kind of enabled me to see past a lot of the things that kind of feel like classical music putting itself into a box and just being able to say, you know what? No, you need to make this bigger or you need to make that smaller and really make the interpretations far more effective.
Now, how would those interpretations go over with your old professors? It sounds like you're a little more freer maybe.
Well, I hope that they would like it. I hope that they would be proud.
Yeah. But, you're trying to find your own way through these standard pieces.
We all are, We all are.
But you well know, as the level of musician you are, when somebody steps outside of the sort of established ways of doing, say, that particular cello concerto or that chamber music piece that's a standard part of the repertoire, the evil classical gatekeepers take aim at that person, you do something outside of the norm.
I'll tell you a story. Even though I've spent a lot of time teaching the classics, every now and then I'll let the classics creep back in. And last summer up in Maine, I gave a concert. I performed the Beethoven Archduke Trio. And the violinist was Jeff Nuttall, who's the first violinist of the St. Lawrence Quartet. And the pianist is Alessio Bax. So, real heavy hitters in the concert world. And, I have to say, I was a little like, oh, gosh, I hope that I remember how to play Beethoven. It's been a long time. And first of all, the performance felt great. And not just for me, they seemed pretty happy about it, too. But there's this moment, like at the end of the third movement, as it transitions into the last movement, where it just sounds like the sky opens up, and it's the most beautiful moment ever. And I looked at Jeff and Alessio, and I was like, this is so amazing. you guys get to play this kind of music all the time, but I feel like I'm rediscovering this music for the first time all over again. And I was so moved. And Alessio just reached over the piano and he looked at me and he said, "It never gets old."
My guest today is Jeffrey Ziegler, who will be performing for Corgus Productions tonight at 8 o'clock in the Dungeness Theater of Tulsa Performing Arts Center, program of new music, which will feature selections from his new recording, Something of Life, which just came out this last year, and it sort of documents sort of this last year or so of premiering new works. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear another piece here in just a moment. You had this great collaboration with Glenn Cacci. Tell us how this came about.
Well, Glenn, of course, he's the drummer in the band Wilco. And I had the pleasure of meeting Glenn, gosh, I won't even say how many years ago, maybe 8 years ago, when he wrote a piece for Kronos. We immediately hit it off and became friends and always talked about this idea of doing something together. And finally, you know, because of my newfound freedom, we were able to make it happen. He wrote this piece that works both as a solo piece, but also as a duo with percussion. And it's a magical piece. It takes the listener on a journey literally all over the world. It's a compilation of field recordings that he made from an Indian wedding procession that he literally walked in the middle of in San Francisco to the Botanic Gardens in Sydney.
It sounds like there's park scenes.
There's a moment where he walks into the cathedral in Cologne, and he hears someone perform Beethoven, and it has that, you know, sound. And it's a compilation, the Tokyo Fish Market, just a lot of different sounds.
And he has this wonderful device where you hear these walking footsteps that take you from scene to
scene.
Well,
those are his footsteps, actually.
Yeah.
And I think that what he was trying to capture in our conversations together is that, you know, one thing that we both share in our lives is that the amount of time that we spend on tour. And so he wanted to be able to bring that kind of experience into the piece that he created.
Well, let's hear a little excerpt from Something of Life. This is my guest today, Jeffrey Ziegler, which you can hear the full piece tonight in his concert at the Dungeness Theater. By Glenn Cacci, Something of Life, performed by my guest today, Jeffrey Ziegler, who will be performing tonight at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center. Jeffrey spent 8 years with Kronos Quartet, left in 2014, and doing solo work and collaborating with composers. So you're also involved in a music festival called Vision into Art, and I know there's on the website you have this great collaboration with Vijay Iyer and Scott Coley that you're involved with this, and this is something your wife is the music director of, right?
Yeah, she Vision into Art started this music festival called the Ferris Festival, and last year that took place at the Stone in New York, which the Stone is the space that's John Zorn's music space there in the Lower East Side. And for that, every night there was a different program. Sometimes there would be two completely different programs. And to open the Ferris Festival, I brought in a few friends to do a fully improvised set. And the seeds of that collaboration actually went back to another collaboration I was involved in with Kronos, with Billy Childs. In his quartet, Scott Colley, he's the bass player, and Scott and I, we just really hit it off, and we're like, "Hey, man, yeah, we got to do something. We got to do something." We talked about this for years and years and years, and then finally, I emailed Scott and I asked him, "Well, what do you think about this? Let's just put something on the calendar." And he said, great. And so we got together a few friends. We contacted Vijay Iyer and Satoshi Takashi, and everyone said yes. And I thought, wow, this is great. Everyone said yes. What are we going to do? I don't know. And as we got closer to the date, I think it may have been like 2 days before the show, we got together in my living room to practice. And I wanted to have it be a bit of a collective, actually, so it wouldn't be like one person like me coming in with charts. Like, I wanted everyone to kind of come in with some material, and that's exactly what we did. And I have to admit, I was pretty freaked out. That was probably the scariest thing I've ever done.
So were these more like lead sheets or even not even lead sheets or maybe, you know, a motive that you...
Motives, ideas. Uh-huh. I don't have a great deal of experience doing this. So I put some stuff down on a piece of paper and I shared it with everyone. But I was kind of petrified. Number one, for putting myself in that situation. Number two, because I began to realize before this concert, like, oh man, these are like the biggest improvisers around. What am I doing? Like, I'm gonna look like a moron. But boy, what a lesson. I learned so much playing with those guys. We started playing and it sounded terrific. And I thought, wow, this is the key. All you have to do is play with great musicians and then they make it sound great. And they're just doing their thing. They're not even listening to me. And it's great. I can just kind of fit in. And then I kind of changed a little something. And then everybody changed what they were doing. And I thought, oh man.
No, they're
listening to me. They're listening really carefully. And so that was quite a learning experience. But, you know, the biggest thing that I realized was just how incredibly in tune that they're really focused and listening to each other and so flexible. And I think that in all music, I mean, in, you know, whether you're playing, you know, a Beethoven string quartet, you should be listening very carefully. I have never played with people who listened that intensely. I was really amazed.
You know, when you're talking like that, it reminds me of what Yo-Yo Ma's been doing the last few years, where he's just investigating all these different musics mm-hmm. and sort of, you know, because he's one of the great cellists of the world.
He has
the greatest musicians in that genre playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not exactly how it would be without him, mm-hmm. but yet they come to this great sort of melding between this great cello player and this ethnic music. I'm sure it's sort of the same feeling with you.
Well, I mean, Yo-Yo Ma's amazing. I have so much respect for him. I mean, what he does, he's a true ambassador for music, for the cello. He couldn't play a better instrument as far as I'm concerned. Such a wonderful guy, great artist.
Well, we wish you great success with it, and we look forward to the concert.
Thank you.
Jeffrey, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Jeffrey Ziegler speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The cellist was formerly a member of the Kronos Quartet, now embarking on a solo career. He'll be appearing tonight for Corgus Productions in a concert tonight at 8 o'clock at the Dungeness Theater of the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, performing works from his new recording, Something of Life. We're going to leave you with music from Something of Life. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.